Espionage, conspiracies, terrorists, and secret governments are the stuff of Robert Ludlum's international thrillers. Ludlum likes to keep his readers in suspense. Book critic John Leonard once wrote, "Ludlum tells a story like a man who must get it done before the house burns down around us. I sprained my wrists turning his pages." Most of Ludlum's books make it onto the bestseller lists. Some of his best-known novels are The Bourne Identity, The Parsifal Mosaic, and The Holcroft Covenant. Ludlum's book The Osterman Weekend was made into a film by director Sam Peckinpah. Robert Ludlum's latest book, The Icarus Agenda, is the number one bestseller on the New York Times paperback fiction list. It's set in the Middle East and in Washington. A group of Arab terrorists seize the American embassy, and an American congressman attempts to infiltrate the terrorists by posing as one himself. There are plot points that parallel the Iran-Contra affair, but Ludlum doesn't want to be accused of stealing from the headlines.
Contrary to what a lot of people think, and especially since my name was used so frequently during the Iran scam hearings, I believe Senator Rudman stood in the Capitol steps and said, "If Robert Ludlum had written this, I'd believe it, but not as fact." But I can assure you, no, it is not based on any particular event, and I finished the novel before the Iran scam hearings. I just want to get that out of the way, Terry, okay?
Good enough. Well, speaking of the Iran-Contra hearings, though, did that make you think that truth is stranger than fiction?
No, it just sort of convinced me that my paranoia was not exactly, unrequited, as it were.
Well, you've been writing about secret governments for some time.
Yes, I have. I think one of my themes is the abuse of power, both elected and appointed.
There are secret governments. There are also, like, individual fanatics that you write about.
Yeah.
Do you think
that
kind of fanaticism and those kinds of secret governments don't choose sides, that they are to be found in all in all political sides throughout the world?
Well, I think there's always a fringe, a lunatic fringe, on anything that is so absolute that does not consider the other fellow's point of view. In other words, people who don't want to negotiate are going to be fanatical. It's really a kind of a, you know, either or. You're either my way or else you're not. And that's the kind of blind thinking that I find so abhorrent, and that's why I write about it, I guess.
Now, your main character in the Icarus Agenda is a fairly unassuming guy, especially at the beginning, and he's someone who doesn't want a lot of attention.
Well, he's somebody who is not ambitious in the political sense, and that's why I, I might as well tell you that the reason why this book came about was that there are two existing realities that I loathe. One is the senseless violence of the Middle East. The other thing I loathe is what I call the manipulation of the body politic. Now, I'm talking about this country because I live here. We have the best system, I think, in the world, but nevertheless, there are the corruptors. And that's another thing I don't like. We're told things are one way, and you peel the layers away, and we find out it's something else. So I thought that if I could tell the story of one man crossing from one world into another, both parts of these worlds that I find outrageous, I thought it would make a more meaningful, possibly more powerful book.
Well, how about this? You also, I mean, there are people who get shot in your book, and you try to imagine what it would feel like. You know,
well, I was in World War II.
Were you ever shot?
No.
Do you ever wonder what it would feel like to be shot?
Well, of course, don't we all?
Yeah, I've dreamt about it many times.
No, I don't mean that. But I mean, you know, when you read about the violence that's taking place, you've got to put yourself in a victim's shoes every now and then. You can't help it. It's human nature to think, my God, what must it be like? I have been severely hurt. Yes, we all have, and the human condition can't take it. It's one of the reasons why there's no protagonist or no real character in any of my books that is severely wounded and gets up in the next chapter and chases the Indians. I mean, the human condition can't take that, and I try to explain that.
I read in one place that you ran away from home at the age of 14 to join the Marines, to lie about your age and join the Marines. And another place I read that at the age of 14 you ran away to be in the theater. I'm not sure if either of those things are true.
Well,
so maybe
there's a grain of truth in all of it. But it's true. I did not run away from home. I left home. And I left home originally to go on the stage. I was in Junior Miss and Janie in the Chicago, New York companies. And it's true that I did not join the Marines then. What I did was I tried to enlist in the Royal Canadian Air Force.
What kind of roles did you play when you were acting?
I either played homicidal killers or lawyers, and I've always thought there was a very definite connection. I was the guy that sent Siobhan McKenna to the stake in St. Joan. And he was a lawyer, of course. And then the next show I did on television, I can't even remember the name of the show now, but I think I was considered schizophrenic, paranoid, dangerous, and I'm not sure I was electrocuted, but I certainly should have been. I think both for the acting and the role, but nevertheless, it was...
Now, you did commercial voiceovers for a while, too, right?
Yeah, I know. It's morally one step below theft, but when you have a couple of kids in college, it doesn't hurt. No.
What kind of commercials did you do the voicing for?
Well, let's see. You know, there's so many that you do, and there's so many that you try out for. You're never quite sure. I do know that I was the voice of Braniff Airlines. You remember, you'll like flying Braniff style. And then, of course, there was the one years ago. I think I did it. I'm not sure, but should a gentleman offer a lady a Tipperillo? And then, of course, there was the plunge works fast. Let's not go into that. But no, it was thanks to a lovely agent. You know, people kept saying to me when I was an actor, boy, you'd make a terrific producer. And I got the message, you know, get off the stage. And so I did and became a producer. But when I did make the switch to, and when I decided I really wanted to spend full time as a writer, to which my wife, who's a superb actress, thought she won. She immediately thought she'd have to go back to work. She said, well, you're 40 years of age, Robert, and you might as well try it now, no matter how impoverished we may be. But I did have the voiceovers going, and I'm eternally grateful for it.
Did people used to recognize your voice?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Well, it was embarrassing?
No, not embarrassing, but they'd say, don't I know you? And I'd say, I don't think so. See, I'm sure I know you. And I knew what they were thinking of. You know, I had just sold Tuna Helper to them 45 times or something, you know. But, or Hamburger Helper, whatever that was, I don't know.
So when you dropped acting at age 40, what made you think you could actually write?
Well, I've been a closet writer for years. When I was coming back from the South Pacific, I wrote a book that I'm afraid on discharge, myself and several friends over-imbibed at the top of the mark in San Francisco, and I lost an 800-page manuscript. And to this day, I say to people, they say, my God, you've really lost a manuscript like that size? And I always say, yeah, you never remembered Naked and the Dead? I don't think Norman really appreciates that story, but it's true.
Do you think that you write roles that you could play? Would you like to act the role of some of your main characters?
I think some of my actor friends would probably throw up at the thought, but nevertheless, I've been offered a number of roles since I became a writer, much more than I was ever offered as an actor. But no, I don't really think so. One, I couldn't take work from an actor. You know, they work too hard for a living. But no, I don't have any great desire to act again, no.
Well, I'm hardly the first person to point out that just about every one of your books has a three-word title.
Yes.
The Bourne Supremacy, yeah. The Aquitaine Progression, The Parsifal Mosaic, yeah. The Bourne Identity, The Matterese Circle, and on and on.
Yeah, well, I can tell you how it happened if you want to
know.
Yeah,
would you?
Yeah, the third or fourth book I wrote, the first book was Scarlatti Inheritance, the second, I think, was The Osterman Weekend, the third was Matlock Paper. Now, those were three-word titles because I felt they made sense. And I walked in with my fourth book, the publishers, and the title was Cable Tortugas. And here were these six people sitting around the table and looked at me like they were crying and weeping. And I said, my God, is it that bad? And they said, no, not the book. The book's all right, but the title. I said, what's wrong with the title? I mean, it says it. And they said, oh, no, you're identified with the three-word title. I said, what do you mean identified with a I'm not identified with a popsicle, for heaven's sakes. Nobody knows who I am. They said, oh, no, and somebody in the New York Times had said I was identified. Well, you know, if it was in the New York Times, that's what they got to believe it, you know. And so I said, okay, fellas, now, wait a minute. I stop crying. I said, now, this whole book is about an exchange, right? I mean, diamonds for gyroscopes. And they said, yeah, an exchange. And I said, a guy who does it named Reinman, right? And they said, yes. And I said, how about the Reinman Exchange? Oh, thank you. And I thought, oh, my God, it's the silliest day I've ever spent in my life. But ever since then, they've wanted the three-word titles, and now it's become a game for me. Now, it's never been a conscious thing. It wasn't then. It is now. Now I know that, and I sympathize with them.
It's your duty to do it now.
Well, yeah, duty because they're nice people. And why not? And I think I'm a nice person, so we can compromise on this.